You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is Joe Healy, and we are here to put a bow on our series of rewatching classic games or looking back at classic teams throughout college baseball recent history. I guess we've been doing it kind of over the last 30 years, mostly relying on games that Joe found on YouTube. And, you know, it's a series that has kept us company, I guess, kept us busy during the shutdown and during what was supposed to be the championship season, I guess, as it were. But that is over now. You know, they should have crowned a champion in Omaha this week. And so with that, we're going to bring this series to a close, but we're not going to do that without looking back on everything and kind of reflecting on what Joe and I have learned through our trip through some college baseball history here. So Joe, it's this whole project was your idea from the start, and you went out and found all of the games on YouTube. So it was kind of your thing from the get-go, but you know, I know we've both had a lot of fun going back and watching some of these older games and you know, just having a chance to talk about some baseball stuff during a time when there was no new baseball being played for us to focus on.
Yeah, you putting that that this series kind of kept us company, I think, is a really good way to put it, because I can remember with, you know, version 1.0 of this list, because we put out two separate lists, that the first one, I remember putting it together in the literal aftermath of the season getting canceled, and It really was kind of, I don't know, coping mechanism is probably too strong a way to put it, but I think there was something to that where it was kind of like what I thought my spring was going to look like had just completely changed overnight, and it was a kind of way to say, okay, well, you know, there's some stuff out there that, you know, a lot of these YouTube games were games that I had stumbled across before and just really hadn't had the time to go back and watch, you know, or maybe it was more just that once the season's over, you're kind of ready to move on, and then you want to take a little break from it. Before you know it, you're back at it. So just for one reason or another, it was a lot of games that I had earmarked that I hadn't gotten around to. And so this was kind of a way to say, okay, you know what, like, this sucks. The season is canceled. There's just no way around that. But here's, you know, some games that I've wanted to watch that I'm interested in. There's still some interesting stuff to watch and talk about here. So it really did keep us company. I think that's a really good way to put it. It's also just one of those deals where this was a skill I did not know would necessarily transfer. You never know what skills are going to transfer. I don't even know if I'd call it a skill, but something that I just had not assumed would turn into reasonably good content for the site and for the podcast. Because like I said, these were a lot of games that I had already come across. And I mean, I've spent hours of my life just kind of going through YouTube looking for old games, old highlight packages, you know, things like that, just of old college baseball games. And so I kind of had this little mental library of what was already out there, but this kind of spurred me to look even deeper and try even harder. And as often as I found something interesting on page one or two of a specific search result on YouTube, I just as often was on page like eight and found something interesting. And it just goes to show that, you know, you do some digging, there's some cool stuff out there from a college baseball perspective, even if there's not as much out there as there is with college football or college basketball. I mean, my goodness, I presume, given the how those sports are televised, you could find just about any college football or basketball game you want on YouTube. Baseball is a little bit harder, so that's, I guess, part of what made this fun in some way. The other thing that was kind of interesting about this list is how often I heard, like, criticism is not necessarily the right way to put it, but people, I would put this list out and people would comment on it. Well, what about this game? Or what about that game? And I had to be like, well, that wasn't on YouTube. This is not a list of like the greatest games of all time. This is, I mean, if you can produce this game on YouTube, I will happily put it on the list, but I can't just magically make these games appear. I don't have this.
Or if you could just like Dropbox it to us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you, and I think I actually gave that advice to several people that commented along that. A lot of them were well-meaning comments. I don't think anybody was really like outraged by it, but there were always like these suggestions. What about this game? Well, hey man, if you can find it, please send it to me and we will put it on our next list. We will happily do so. And so that was kind of funny, is I just think there was, I don't know if it was misunderstanding over what we were doing, or maybe that was just a way of making conversation about the list, was to throw suggestions out there. I don't know, but that was something I had not anticipated. So I'm happy to kind of be wrapping it up this way, because I think there's a lot of, as much as anything else, I think there's a little bit of some loose ends that I've been thinking about since we've been doing this series that we can get into today, but also just to kind of reflect on what this series was, kind of the larger lessons we learned, what ties these games together. You know, I'm sure you and I could go on for hours about that kind of stuff, but, and we won't, but it'll be nice to be able to give it a send-off, if you will.
Yeah, so let's just kind of review which games that we hit on here, so that everyone knows which ones they have to go back and listen to or watch, so that you can get the whole series in. Just as a reminder, we started with the 95 National Championship game. That was Fullerton and USC, and we talked about that with then Fullerton ace, now USC pitching coach, Ted Silva. We had the 2018 Oxford Regional Final. That was Tennessee Tech and Ole Miss, and we talked about that with Matt Braga, then Tennessee Tech coach, now Rice coach. The 94 National Championship game, that was Oklahoma against Georgia Tech, and we talked about that with then Oklahoma player Eric Thomas, Oklahoma outfielder Eric Thomas, now Florida softball assistant coach Eric Thomas. The 2006 Lincoln Regional opener between Manhattan and Nebraska, and we talked about that with then Manhattan ace, now Manhattan pitching coach Chris Cody, who out-dueled Jabba Chamberlain that day, spoiler alert. The 92 National Championship game, that was Pepperdine. And we talked about that with then Pepperdine All-American Steve Rodriguez, and now the Baylor coach. 2011 College World Series game between South Carolina and Virginia. Talked about that with Gamecocks ace Michael Roth. 2018 Gainesville Super Regional, that was Auburn against Florida, and we talked about that with Florida outfielder Austin Laneworthy, still Florida outfielder Austin Laneworthy, in fact. 2013 Raleigh Super Regional, Rice and North Carolina State, talked about that with Elliot Avent, then and now the North Carolina State coach. The 2000 College World Series, and just the run that the Raging Cajuns had with assistant coach Anthony Babineau. 2018 Athens Regional Final, that was Georgia and Duke, and we talked about that with Duke coach Chris Pollard. And then just this last week, I talked with John Manuel, former college beat writer at Baseball America and editor and numerous other things. Talked with him about the rise of Rice, culminating in the Owls National Championship in 2003. So that's kind of the rundown. Now, Joe, had put together two lists of 10 games. So that's, you know, 20 games altogether that were on that list, on those lists. Obviously we didn't do all of them. And, you know, like we said, there were many more that, you know, we were trying to find, couldn't find, or, you know, just didn't make a list. So, you know, there are plenty more that we could have and would have liked to do. You know, we're still interested in you know, looking back at some of these. I know that personally, I really wanted to see the 91 Creighton team. That's a team that you hear a lot out in Omaha about, obviously, for obvious reasons, you know, with them being kind of the home team, the literal home team in the College World Series that year. And so I thought that would have been a fun one to look back on. But unfortunately, the Creighton stuff only appeared very late in the process. So we'll probably look back at that at some future date. But that was kind of a miss for me. Joe, I know I'm going out of order now, but why don't we just hit some of the other games that we didn't get to on the list. You know, another very obvious one that was on the list that we didn't touch on was the 96 national title game. That's the one where Warren Morris hits the walk-off for LSU against Miami. Again, spoiler alert. We didn't do that one. It would have been fun to do, but there's a whole literal documentary about it that the SEC Network and ESPN did. So, you know, going back, you know, they did a whole thing on it. I don't know that we could have outdone them on that. So that's one of the reasons we never got around to doing that 96 national title game.
Yeah, it turned out to be a little more crowded space in some cases because you had that, and that's just a really well-documented game in general. And then we also debated at one point, you know, 2018 Super Regional between Mississippi State and Vanderbilt, but, you know, Jake Mangum, who has gotten a little bit into the media game a little bit, especially during this pandemic, and he was involved in some project that was going over that game so well, we felt like we really couldn't do that one. So there were a couple instances of that. What's funny is I think the listeners obviously won't know this because I don't think we ever mentioned it or promised it or teased it on air, but the 05 Texas Baylor College World Series game has essentially been on deck this entire time. And there were a couple of reasons for that. One just being, and I think this is part of, by the way, what makes this game such an interesting one and so great in a lot of ways is it's not exactly, like there are some of these rosters where we had all kinds of options, whether it's players who are now coaches or players who, you know, went on to pro careers where they're out there and doing media availability, things like that. Like these were not those types of rosters. And so there weren't just a ton of obvious options for guests. And of course, unfortunately Augie Garrido is no longer with us. So like, you know, he was clearly not an option. And so we kind of ran dry there. It was also just a deal where every time it felt like we were going to come around to doing that game, we kind of got a different idea and we're like, oh yeah, we could definitely do that. I mean, so that was a game that probably, you know, 3 or 4 weeks in a row, we thought maybe is what we were moving on to. And we just never did. So there was that one. That game has a good ending too. Chance Wheelis, who'd been battling an injury, hits a big home run for Texas to beat Baylor. So that was just a fun game there. The other one that really stands out to me is 91 Clemson Long Beach State, which was on my second list. And that's not a particularly good game. I think Teddy in particular would have hated that game. It's a high scoring elimination game.
Part of the reason we didn't do it.
Right. And, you know, that one too was a little bit tough.
I looked at that game. I looked at the box score from that game. And I was like, nah, I don't know about this one, Joe.
Yeah. It also would have been tough because it's a game from 91, you know. So tracking people down from those is tough. But I think that would have been a game not too dissimilar from the 2000, you know, ULL San Jose State game. Although that turned out to be a better game than I think I had imagined it would be. But that one was, we talked about that game as basically just a way to talk about that 2000 Cajuns team. And I think had we done 91 Clemson Long Beach, I think it would have been just an opportunity to talk about those two programs more broadly. I mean, those are two big college baseball brands that we just didn't get to either one in this series. So it felt like maybe that was an opportunity to do that. And I think more specifically Long Beach State, because they are such a big brand in the 90s, early 2000s in college baseball, and to not have them represented felt like not our fault. Like, we did what we could. They're a team that definitely just doesn't have that many games out there on YouTube, because trust me, I tried. They're just, their footprint isn't that big out there. But it would have been nice to be able to talk about those Long Beach teams, because all you have to do is look at some of the research that we've done at BA about what programs put players into pro baseball. And when you consider that, you know, Long Beach State doesn't have some of the lengthy track record of some of these other programs, they more than hold their own. I mean, in those early 2000s teams in particular were just absurdly talented. And so that was just a program that felt like we should have gone out of our way in a perfect world to talk about. We just never really got a good opportunity for that. It's also, Long Beach is interesting to me because the cultural cachet is there. I mean, they really made the LB hat cool, like really cool. And I growing up, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, I saw a ton of Long Beach State baseball hats. And, you know, some of that I think was baseball, and some of it is, you know, a guy like Snoop Dogg famously from Long Beach, and, you know, he wore those hats. And so I think that's part of it there as well. But it's just a really big, it has a lot of cultural cachet for what was really a pretty narrow length of time that Long Beach State was at the top of the sport. When you really look at the history of it, you know, Dave Snow gets there and really gets that thing cooking immediately, quite literally immediately. And then, you know, it burned out fairly in terms of being a national title contending program. It burned out fairly quickly in the grand scheme of things compared to some other programs that have had similar highs as to what Long Beach State had. I guess one more that this was not on either list, but one more just in terms of what programs we'd like to talk about. Wichita State feels like one because they are an interesting story. And it's, I think a lot of the same things you talked about with John on the last podcast that I wasn't there for, which was fantastic, by the way, I recommend everyone go back and listen to it. A lot of the same themes about the way you talked about Rice in their rise, I think would be pretty similar to Wichita State. You just turn the clock back 20, 25 years. I think it was a similar story of, well, you know, college baseball was just, you know, nobody was really trying yet. And Gene Stephenson and Wichita State decided they wanted to try, and voila. And there's a lot more that goes into that, of course. But that was another, if I could have found a good Wichita State game for us to watch, I think that would have been another good one. And if I just, it was another missed, you know, miss out there of a team that I would have liked to have had on at least one of these two lists.
One of the other ones that was on the list that I, you know, kind of wanted to do, but we didn't do for reasons, was the 2004 Fullerton National Championship. We didn't do it because I felt like we hit Fullerton pretty hard. You know, they were the first one we did. They kept showing up in other games. And it just felt like, okay, we've done Fullerton. We've told, you know, there's plenty of stories to be told about Fullerton, and every year is different, and all the rest of that. But that was something that held us back from doing the 2004 team. But that's an interesting team. Obviously, what Jason Windsor did on the mound is very interesting. And just, you know, them winning with George Horton at the helm, not Augie, it is interesting as well. So there's a lot there that we could have covered, but we didn't do it because, you know, I felt a little Fullertoned out at times during this. You know, they show up in the 92 one in addition to, you know, winning in 95. We did both of those. So that was one for me. And then, you know, we also did consider going back to the 2018 Oregon State game two. That's, you might remember that as the drop pop-up. That would have been an interesting one if we delved into it, because there was a lot going on in that game, of course. It is one of the fresher ones and probably one of the more remembered games of recent college baseball history. So, you know, I don't feel bad about doing some of the other that we did in that 2018 tournament and not getting to that one, just because I feel like, you know, like we talked about while we were doing it, I'd never watched Tennessee Tech against Ole Miss. I was doing other things while that game was on. I was at another game. And so I'd never gone back and watched that. You know, we all lived the Oregon State over Arkansas, you know, drop pop up. So it just was a little less interesting to me than some of the other ones that we did from that specific tournament. And then we kind of went through, like Joe and I would talk about this, but you know, if you look at it from like the 2000s were kind of a lost decade for us. Joe just couldn't find that many games at that time that were on. You know, of course, ESPN has continually been showing Oregon State over UNC in the College World Series, but you know, there just weren't a whole lot of games in that decade, especially in the second, you know, after about 2004, from 2005 on, you know, there weren't a whole lot of games on Joe's list. And I don't think that was an accident. It's just kind of a missing time in terms of the YouTube, you know, that we could find. I guess ESPN's also showing the 2008 one with Fresno State a lot, but you know, outside of those, you know, I mean, it's not that there aren't storylines. It's more just that like we didn't see much of an opportunity to get into that window of college baseball history.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. I looked and looked hard because it's that. I mean, for me especially, if anything, if all things were equal, and just about any game I could have ever wanted was out there on YouTube to put on this list, I think in a perfect world, I would have probably over-indexed us on games from that period of time. Because
I just thought of this, but you know, something from that time that I really wish we could have had is a Strasburg start.
Yep, no doubt about that. I mean, yeah, that's complicated too, just because, you know, it's San Diego State.
Yeah,
it's
not luck. Like,
yeah, San Diego State, and you know, he you know, had some regional games, but those are back in the days when regionals weren't guaranteed to be on TV. And there was that one year, his junior year, when they were in a loaded regional. I'm trying to remember who else was involved there.
I believe Virginia, and I believe Virginia is, I think they hosted, I should pull this up, but I believe they hosted and Virginia won that regional.
Yeah, it was, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my definitive Strasburg. So yeah, games from that regional, I think, would have,
they did
would
not
have been
host. They were in Oxford, but yes, Virginia won, I was correct. Yeah. Or not in Oxford, they were in Irvine. Irvine, Fresno, San Diego State, Virginia.
Yeah, and that was 09, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so part of that was like defending national champion Fresno State. So some of it was kind of probably more about the headline names versus like the actual, I mean, that's a tough regional, don't get me wrong. But yeah, some of it was maybe a little more just about the headline names versus the reality of it being particularly difficult. But yeah, I mean, that would have been probably the ones to have. But like I was saying, I think in a perfect world, we probably would have been over-indexed on these games because that was the period of time when I was really into college baseball. I mean, clearly I am now too, but that was when I was first having my awakening as a college baseball fan, was the early to mid 2000s. And I would have loved to have had, you know, some games from those years. And I looked for certain teams. You know, I looked for 2005 Tulane was a team I definitely looked for. Team was number one basically all the way through the year. And got to Omaha. I looked for that. I looked for the, you know, 06, 08 Rice teams a little bit, just because I was familiar with those. And, you know, so there were individual teams I looked for in those years. And, you know, because sometimes you could search by the team name, sometimes you could search by like the regional or super regional name, sometimes you just searched College World Series and you saw where it took you. So there were a lot of different strategies, but yeah, it was weird that was just kind of a hole. And I guess part of it is that I think we actually talked about this on a previous episode when we were discussing, it was probably right after the second list got released, but I think there was I think there's a period of time where things had kind of, in the mid 2000s, things had mostly stopped being taped on VHS, but things weren't yet being DVR'd in mass like they are now. And so I think there was that little gap where, you know, a lot of the classic games we're looking at were probably copied over from VHS recordings when people were kind of habitually VHS recording things, but it wasn't yet at a point where DVRing, like I know some people who just DVR basically anything they'd ever maybe want to watch and use that as their guide a little bit. I mean, people weren't doing that yet. And so I don't know, that's just like a little, that's not a question really for me to tackle, but that's my working theory on part of why that is. But for whatever reason, it was disappointing to not get that a little more well represented. And it's part of the reason I think we kept circling 05 Baylor, Texas a little bit. It's like, it just kind of felt like a, like a hole in terms of time period that we weren't quite able to get filled.
All right. So we talked about the teams that we or games that we didn't get to. Now let's look at some of the stuff that we were able to glean from this exercise. You know, anytime we step back into history, like we spend a lot of time, anytime we were into the 90s, talking about just how much the game had changed, how differently coaches were managing in the World Series environment. We talked about how, in, especially in that 95 game, the starters were just given so much more rope than they would be today. That they were, you know, the hooks now come a lot quicker than they were coming back then. And, you know, we didn't watch any true guerrilla ball games, but we were starting to get into some of that with some of those games. And, you know, it's obviously a much different version of baseball. And we did see some of the absolute dead ball games, and that's a much different version of the baseball that we see. And so I just found it interesting to, you know, just in the last 30 years, just how much the game, you know, has flowed through these different eras. And a lot of it's been equipment driven or ballpark driven, but it just very much shapes the game, and each game that you drop in on is kind of just like a perfect little time capsule in a lot of respects of, you know, what's going on in college baseball at the time. Is it offensive driven? Is it pitching driven? Have they, you know, managed to find an equilibrium? And, you know, it was interesting to watch games over a relatively short time span, but to see how many iterations college baseball has gone through.
I totally agree. I think that was maybe my favorite big picture thing, was just being able to flip on one of these games and be teleported to a specific time and place in college baseball's history. I think that quite honestly was my favorite part of all of it. And I think it also led me to, it reminded me that we should be thankful that we have college baseball the way we have it. Now, everyone's got different tastes. I get that. So some of it's just an aesthetic preference, but I think we're pretty fortunate with the way college baseball works now, in that we've got good balance. You know, the good pitchers pitch well and put up the numbers. The good hitters hit well and put up the numbers. And in previous iterations of college baseball, whether that was 90s, early 2000s, where, you know, anybody could hit the ball out at any time and pitching was extraordinarily difficult, to the opposite we had in the early 2010s, where, you know, you played your outfielders at half depth and dared anybody to burn you. Like, that was pretty awful. So we've really hit a pretty good balance in college baseball right now. And I don't really hear anybody complaining necessarily about the way the game is played these days, at least in terms of that type of stuff. And I think we're pretty fortunate that we have the sport as the way we have it now. And sure, there was some pain along the way. And I say pain just in terms of, I think we all realized very quickly in 2011 that, whoops, the game has tilted in the wrong direction. And, you know, we gave it some time to try to see if maybe over time it would normalize. And in some ways it did, but not to the extent that I think everyone was hoping it would. So, we made adjustments to the ball, and voila, we are where we are now. And I think that's a really good place for college baseball. And maybe that's a little bit of prisoner of the moment. And you know, that's the college baseball I see now right in front of me. And that looks pretty good to me. But I'm pretty confident in saying that they were fortunate to have the balance we have now in the sport, where it feels like we're getting fair outcomes and fair results, and each aspect of the game is able to flourish in a way that is commensurate with the talent that we see on the field.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. That, you know, if you're just looking at it from, you know, the perspective of today's game, that, yeah, what we have is a good product that we're able to watch. That, you know, it's not pitching heavy, it's not hitting heavy. I mean, maybe there are going to be people that dispute that, but that is one of the remarkable things as we watch the big league game struggle with its baseball, and, you know, accusations about juice baseballs, suddenly unjuiced baseballs and all the rest that you've seen happen in the big leagues over the last 2 years. Very much looking forward to those conversations again in a month. The college fixed its ball once, and that was it. That they made the change, and it's been pretty smooth sailing the last few years in regards to that. So that should be taken for granted. And I don't know how long this equilibrium is going to last for, but it is a definite positive aspect of college baseball. In the last 5-6 years, I would say that they've been able to made a correction. They saw that it was an overcorrection or that there were unintended consequences from the change, and then they found a relatively minor tweak to make, and that ushered in a new era that everyone seems to be pretty comfortable with the balance between hitting and pitching. Joe, I know you also, you're a person that's pretty into the underdog story. And so we had several underdogs, that we watched during this series, of course. One of your favorite games, the Manhattan game. But also just, a program like Pepperdine or Rice winning a national title. And then there's this like weird space that Fullerton inhabits in which, they are thought of as this, college baseball power, but also this college baseball underdog. But the teams that we saw, really just when Fullerton is good, they're elite. There's not a whole lot of underdogness about them, except that because it says Fullerton across their chest, they play a certain way and they're a certain kind of player, and that kind of leads to these underdog stories.
Yeah, that was really, I hadn't really grappled with that, I don't think, until to your point, we had so much Fullerton coming at us in this series. And you're right in that we talked about doing the 0-4 game, and that game seemed interesting, but it was like, well, we've had quite a bit of Fullerton and Fullerton influence in these games that we've watched. But that's really interesting point to me, and something I thought about a little bit, is that because it's Fullerton, I think we look at them as, well, they're going to be a little undersized, and two things can be true, right? So let me just say that up front, but they're a little bit undersized. They're going to be a little less prospecty than your average team that wins at the level that they do, of which there are few, by the way, historically. They're going to run every ball out. They're going to dive. They're just going to do every little thing they can to try to eke out wins. And that's just a very much an attitude that program has. And I think it can be easy to look at them as like kind of plucky underdogs, if you will. And maybe more in recent years, as, not to open a different can of worms, but as the power centers in college baseball have shifted less from the West Coast and into the Southeast and into the programs that are in the big money conferences. Maybe that's more true of Fullerton now because they are having to win that way more consistently. But you look at some of these teams of yesteryear and you're like, okay, they definitely still did play that way. And like Ted Silva was not a guy that was up there throwing mid-90s fastballs and was destined for great things in the big leagues. Like he was a very, very stereotypical Fullerton pitcher in a positive way and in terms of just what he wasn't. But then you look at the balance of those teams, though, and it's like, okay, plucky underdogs, but like Mark Kotze is considered by a lot of people who know the game as perhaps the best college baseball player of all time. And Phil Nevin was an outstanding prospect in 92 and went on to a good big league career. And there are countless other examples if you go up and down Fullerton's history. So on the one hand, yes, they do kind of embody this underdog mentality, but on the other hand, like they've had plenty of players, and because they kept popping up in our list as games we either watched or potential games to watch, it really hammered home that like, no, this program was really cooking in the 80s and 90s, early 2000s in particular. I mean, was really, really cooking. And I think I had probably underestimated that a little bit, just in my understanding of what Fullerton was at that time.
You know, we've talked about this a fair amount during the series. Just the idea of underdogs, is it possible for a program like Rice to rise today, or Pepperdine, or can some of these underdog programs happen in today's environment. Having watched all of this, has your perception of that like changed at all? Or do you miss, you know, do you wish that, you know, we had today a team like Pepperdine going out and winning the national title that in Wichita, you know, within a 4-year span, it was Wichita, two SEC schools and then Pepperdine. Like, do you wish that something like that could be possible today?
Sure. But I think there's a couple of things there. I mean, one is that, you know, we just had Coastal Carolina win a national title 4 years ago now. And they're kind of interesting because they were really good for a while. They had a fairly long on-ramp just to get to Omaha, and then they got to Omaha and won a national title just like that. So they're kind of in a unique space, but I think it's a similar, you know, I think they kind of fit into those categories, because we talked about Pepperdine's past, and Pepperdine maybe followed a similar trajectory to what Coastal had done, like in the postseason a lot, and had some players and was a well-respected program, and they just kind of happened to get there and put it all together one particular year. So I do think that type of thing. So I do wish we had more of that, but it hasn't been so long since we have had a little bit of that. But at the same time, I know that my brand is very much about the underdogs and the little guy and seeing these upsets. And I get the other part of it too, is that this maybe is not so much of a quirky trait, is like, I also get bored easily. And like, I love seeing the teams that are operating at the top of their, you know, at peak performance. But at the same time, like, okay, you know, I've seen this same group of players for 3 years now dominate the sport. Like, I kind of, you know, I think one of the reasons I like college baseball is there is that kind of constant turnover. So there's always something new every year. In college sports, I think more broadly, that's why I like them, is there's just not the sameness year to year. So that is going on as well for this. But at the same time, though, I do like that our sport is in a place where everyone is trying and everyone is putting the effort forward. And very rarely do you have these, you know, there used to be, and there still is to some degree, but it felt like there were all these sleeping giants in college baseball. And, you know, if you talk to people, they'll probably tell you there still are in this place or that place. And I think everyone's got a different opinion of what that means and who those teams are, but there are just a lot less of those now, because you roll the clock back, and John could tell you, I'm sure, you roll the clock back 15, 20 years, and they could have given you, anybody who knew the sport could have given you a laundry list of places that, oh, if they really committed to college baseball, they could win big. And there are just fewer of those places now, and I'd rather us be there, because that means the sport is healthier, that means the sport is more talented, that means the sport is more competitive in terms of depth and breadth. So while I can lament the fact that we don't have, you know, national title contending underdog programs from smaller conferences, I can't understand why that's better for our sport in the grand scheme of things. So that being said, though, I do think these things can kind of still happen. We've talked about this, like, you don't have to get that hot in the postseason to really make a Cinderella run. You know, you just have to win a couple more games than you lose to get it done. And that's still a hard thing to do. I'm not minimizing that, but that can happen. And I'm also just a big believer in places maybe don't win until you find the right combination of factors, and then you do win, whether that's the right coach, a transcendent player that kind of makes other players think about going to that school. Those things, I think, still can happen, even if they happen less. And I think that the fact that they can happen less in the big picture is good news for college baseball.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And in general, yeah, the Wichita and the Pepperdine and the Rice, and, you know, that's all, it, like we've said, it's possible because at the time, less programs were as committed as they are today. And to be in a place where more programs are more committed is a positive. You know, regardless of whether that just means that it's a little more Power Five hegemony, and, you know, whether that's positive or not, you know, that it, the fact that the Big Ten is fully engaged again is a positive, and that the SEC is, and the Big 12 are totally engaged, and the ACC is totally engaged, that this isn't just a Pac-12 and Texas sport, basically, you know, that it's evolved beyond that, and that's a positive for everyone, even if it makes the path to a national championship harder, that's definitely a positive. I see you, you're also kind of thinking about what programs that we have today or in more recent years we might think of, like we thought, or like you look back at the 2000 Cajuns or the 05 Tulane, or even a Pepperdine. Are there any, I kind of wonder what the Charleston teams that didn't make the World Series, especially in, what was that, 15, the Texas Tech went for the first time?
14.
Yeah. Like, what is that? What's the legacy of that team, going to be? And honestly, even just the legacy of some of these Texas Tech teams, are we going to look back in 15 or so years and marvel at what Texas Tech was doing at this time? Or is it going to be regarded as like, oh, that was the start of like Texas Tech being like one of the Big 12's clear powerhouses, that, and that's just the way it is now?
Yeah, that's an interesting concept, because when I think about, so I wrote in the doc here, this is what, to give a peek behind the curtain, this is what Teddy is referring to, is I typed in just, I'm interested in the idea of what teams are we looking at now that maybe we haven't seen it yet that are going to be talked about the way we talked about the 2000 Cajuns or the 18 Tennessee Tech team. And those are two different things, by the way. Like the 2000 Cajuns, like if they had just gotten to Omaha that one year and that was it, now that is the only time they've gotten to Omaha, but they had a nice run before and after that, and have popped up more and more as time has gone on. They're clearly operating at just a specific high level. Tennessee Tech, it remains to be seen. I mean, they had a lot of that team drafted. Matt Braga leaves for Rice. They haven't kept that momentum. And so I think it's much more likely that just ends up being a pop-up. I mean, it already kind of just is a pop-up thing, considering that they went right back, to being they went back to being a middle-of-the-pack OVC team. So that is clearly more of a pop-up thing. So those are two different definitions. But I am curious to see what teams we have that get talked about in those same ways. And I hadn't thought about a team like Texas Tech, but you're right, is that, we could be looking 10, 12 years from now, is that 14 team being the start of Texas Tech being, one of just the, you could already make the argument that they're on, I don't know how short we want to make the list, but however short you make the list, Texas Tech is probably in the conversation among the best teams, best programs going right now. And they're still waiting on that first national title, but you just kind of wonder if once they get one, if that's all it's really going to take for that thing to really, it's already caught fire, but I don't know what you, for it to become an inferno, basically, for them to win that first national. And there's a couple programs like that, by the way. Louisville is another one still waiting on a first national title, and it feels like they could go on a run once they get the one. So I hadn't really thought about it from the big program standpoint, but that's interesting as well. I think about...
Yeah, I don't know who that is now. Like, we didn't watch, and we didn't even talk about this, but... I don't know why you couldn't have given us a Nebraska in Omaha game, Joe. Like, where was the DVH here in Nebraska? Because, that kind of is potentially what, Louisville's past that and Tech's probably past that now. But that's, that's an example of a power conference program that, had this amazing peak. But it's also become very clear over the last two decades since Van Horn left for Arkansas that while Nebraska is capable of returning to that, that also can't be or shouldn't be the standard that they're just being measured off of, that was a specific moment and it was an incredible moment, but it's not easily repeatable.
Right. No, I think that's exactly right. I failed us by not getting one of those Nebraska games
Hey, you just said Nebraska losing. Why do you hate Nebraska, Joe?
That's right. Yeah, let the record show. I clearly hate Nebraska. But yeah, I mean, there's some of the teams that we talked about them a little bit, I think, last couple episodes ago, or maybe it was an offline. I don't know. I can't keep up. But I think about a team like Dallas Baptist that fits into the, like, so clearly could have fit into the ULL mold if, when they got to a super regional against Cal, if they had gone instead of Cal, because they would have had a similar ramp to ULL, where ULL wasn't a, it wasn't what they were leading up to that 2000 College World Series for 10 or 12 years. It was really a 3, 4, 5, 6 year window at most, whereas Dallas Baptist, you know, got to a regional as an independent in 08. And that was their first go round in Division One. And so if they'd gotten Omaha then, they would have almost completely followed that ULL path. And now, like, don't get me wrong, they're still operating at an extremely high level, but, you know, and they hosted in 15, so it felt like, okay, still building. And this is not an attempt to denigrate that program in any way. I mean, they're a model of consistency, and I wrote about that in my feature on the Missouri Valley Conference last week. But they're kind of a program I'm itching to see get to Omaha, because my mind is trying to fit them into this box, you know, whether they're are they coastal? But if they're coastal, they have to have success in Omaha. I mean, were they, do we count them as kind of in the ULL mix because they just fell like a little bit short of Omaha? Will it just be a one-off? Like, is it like a Kent State situation where Kent State was very, very good, got to Omaha 1 year and then, you know, but I don't know. So like, they're just that's kind of the conversations and the thoughts I'm having about this. I'm rambling here just because they're not necessarily easy buckets to put some of these teams in. And this is why I find it interesting to have these types of discussions or thoughts in my head about what these programs will become. So that's a really bad segue to lead you into whatever you're about to say next. But that's basically what I'm thinking about when I put on the doc that I'm interested to see what teams we talk about in that way. Because I just don't think we know what they are, and the ones that we have a feeling we think we know what they are, like a Dallas Baptist, it's so hard to define what they are, to use the scouting term, it's hard to put a comp on them if they haven't really had that breakthrough just yet, even though I'm eager to do so.
Yeah, I think that's it's an interesting thought exercise, you know, to try and, you know, just go down the future. I mean, you know, I saw it in Stuart Mandel's mailbag on The Athletic this week. A reader noted that we are just as close to 2050 as we are to 1990. And I mean, first of all, let that one sink in. But to think about like what program, you know, Wichita won in 89, Pepperdine won in 92, like think about what we think about them today, what programs are around today that we're going to be thinking about like that in 2050. It's an interesting thought exercise. No easy answers, obviously. The picking out which teams end up being the ones that stay with us, it's not easy. It's hard to say why sometimes these teams do stick with us the way that they do. You know, I feel like I hear Stony Brook mentioned a lot more than I hear Kent State mentioned. And I think some of that is just because they happen to beat LSU and to get to Omaha, and Kent State happened to beat Oregon to get to Omaha. Or maybe it's just as a Clevelander, anytime I hear Stony Brook, I'm like, well, why aren't you also mentioning Kent State? But, you know, every team that does stay with you does it for a reason. So who in recent history are we going to be still thinking about 20 to 30 years from now is always an interesting place to go to.
I mean, you're also right that the near misses, just quickly here, the near misses are interesting because they, in order to be classified as a near miss, you have to be confident also that, like, well, that window has closed. Like, so like Dallas Baptist not getting to Omaha, I don't classify this way because they still very, in any given year, could get to Omaha, right? Like, that's a plausible thing. But the College of Charleston one, like, that window closed. Now they're playing well under Chad Holbrook, and you know, with his pedigree, that seems plausible. They could do that again, but they have to prove it to us. So I think of some other teams like this, like you mentioned one with, I guess maybe I wouldn't classify this as window being closed necessarily, but San Diego State with Strasburg, you know, they had Strasburg, they had some good teams, didn't really have that breakthrough moment even to a super regional. And I think the other one that hits close to home there is San Diego, where you had Chris Bryant, and then several years before that, they hosted a regional. They had like a 3 or 4 year run where they were really the hot mid-major team in college baseball. And you look at some of the assistants they've had there, and you can see a lot of the reason why they, I mean, these guys, you know, Rich Hill has an eye for bringing in assistant coaches, and, you know, had a lot of guys who have gone on to be successful in some other places, Eric Valenzuela and Jay Johnson, guys like that. And so you can see where that success came from. But there really was a moment in time where USD was the hottest mid-major thing going, and they just never put it together in the postseason and got it done. And they had an all-time player in Chris Bryan and you know, couldn't parlay that into postseason success. And now it really does feel like that window closed without them really striking when the iron was hot there. So I think when you brought up the Charleston example, I think that does kind of show that sometimes those near misses are just as interesting as the ones that we look back on in the way that we look back on, you know, 2000 ULL and all the others.
All right. So we also wanted to briefly touch on just some of the great things about college, like some of the things that we saw in this broadcast that are just no longer a part of the culture or the college baseball culture. You know, we've talked about some of these as they came up, but you know, there used to be like a post office window in Rosenblatt so that you could get, you know, the postmark be the College World Series, be Rosenblatt. Obviously, Rosenblatt itself also is, you know, we've moved on from that, but the post office and getting your stamp canceled in the stadium, you cannot do that at TD Ameritrade. You can do a lot of things at TD Ameritrade. That is not something you can do at TD Ameritrade Park.
Yeah, here in 2020, we're closer to the Postal Service closing down than we are to having a post office anywhere in a novelty location like the College World Series. Yeah, definitely one that I guess was that the 95 game? It was like the first game, wasn't it? The 95 game where they had that?
I feel like it wasn't the first one. I think that was 94.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it was right in that time period. But yeah, I remember I looked up and was like, what? When they were doing that kind of remote piece with the sideline reporter there. That was that one made me laugh. A couple of others were, I think it was also in that 94 game, one of the Oklahoma hitters, and I don't remember who it was specifically, but one of the Oklahoma hitters wore his baseball cap under his helmet, which I think is definitely something I remember in Little League where I never did it because it just didn't feel comfortable to me, but I had teammates who 100% wore their hats under their helmets because they were like, yeah, it's just easier. I can take my helmet off.
Well, and they thought it was more comfortable usually because like the helmet didn't quite fit right wasn't provided, like the helmet didn't have enough cushion. So you're looking for a little more cushion. I was never one of the, like, I was with Joe. I wasn't really on that train, but I wasn't on that train because I thought it looked dumb. Like, I could tell it looked dumb. Like, just put your helmet on. But you're right. Yeah. Back then, you know, it was a thing that happened.
It was a thing for sure. Yeah. I just never could quite. Now I'm thinking maybe it was a USC player. I don't know. But there was one of those early or the mid 90s games we watched definitely had a guy wearing a baseball cap under a helmet, which I perceive as being a very, very 90s thing. One, on a more serious note, one thing that I definitely noticed a difference in is in the post-game interviews with these players, noticing that the players really do seem like kids in a way, and in a way that they don't now. And that's not a bad thing. I think it's important as college baseball gets more popular and as college baseball becomes more closely coupled with Major League Baseball and all of that. I think it's important that we really prepare the players to deal with the media and to deal with what that's going to be like. I think it's part of their education. And, you know, we've had some coaches that we've had on this podcast talk about some of the pieces of the educational process that aren't necessarily in a classroom or even baseball related, but something like media training. And so you hear these kids talk now, I mean, freshmen get to campus, even before they've gotten to college, they are very well versed in media trained and you know, how you deal with the media and the type of answers you give and, you know, being poised and well-spoken. And these are smart kids. I'm not surprised about the poised and well-spoken part, but you'd see these post-game interviews of these kids in these games in the 90s, and they really are still just kids. And you can tell they haven't had a ton of that. And now, you know, every one of these kids that goes to these programs that plays in the College World Series is very used to dealing with the media. And like, they've got it down pat by the time they get to the College World Series. And that's something that struck me that is very different in today's college baseball versus 30 years ago.
Yeah, I just thought the nature of those trophy presentations and sideline interviews in the World Series was just very much different. You know, I get that some of it is that they probably rushed the trophy presentation along because that's what CBS wanted. CBS just wanted to get the trophy presentation and done so they could finish their airing of the game and move on to whatever else. Whereas ESPN is, you know, and we had, not only ESPN, but everyone has evolved to like, okay, like you wait for a trophy presentation. There's a process to this. But back then it was basically just like, final out. Maybe there was a handshake line. Not even sure about that. Dog piles over, somebody is just handing them the trophy. Whereas today it's like this whole big production, which honestly is probably better. You know, they make sure that the losing team gets their medal, you know, in their moment on the stage before the whole thing goes off. But it just seemed very fat. Anytime one of these championship games ended, it was like, oh, so we're done now? And like the broadcast is over, like just like that. And like they've already talked to Augie or whoever the coach is, Larry Cashel. It was a much just quicker production once the whole thing ended than what we're used to today.
Yeah, never was it more obvious that we're in a different media landscape in college baseball than one of those games from the 90s where the game ended and then there was like a commercial break. They came back, did the post game, and then it was like, and now we're going to take you to LPGA Tour action. And that was just it. Like it was, I mean, that just now, to your point, now the post game stuff is just content for ESPN. You know, I mean, they like it's a whole. I don't know exactly how they have it works now, but I definitely remember in previous College World Series where, you know, they stuck with the primary broadcast for a little bit, you know, a couple extra segments, but then you could like go on to what they then called ESPN3, and then watch like an extended trophy presentation.
I think that's basically how it's working now. That I think, again, I mean, I'm not watching this on TV these days, but I think what happens is game ends. Chris Button does the sideline interview. Broadcast ends. They pick it up on ESPN Plus. They go to SportsCenter, and then when it's time to give the trophy presentation, I think they come back live during SportsCenter to Omaha. That's how I think that goes down.
Yeah, just a different deal, different time.
Everyone who's listening to this right now is like yelling at their phone that I am so wrong about how ESPN finishes their College World Series broadcast these days, but I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
I mean, are you talking about Mike Rooney? Like, is he the one yelling? He's probably the one yelling.
No, because Rooney is in Omaha still.
He would, well, yeah, I guess it's true. You don't think he knows how it works?
He knows.
Yeah.
He's like preparing to text me right now.
Yeah. Yeah, if you could only hear, he'll have to wait until this gets posted.
Yeah, so we had fun doing this. I also just thought I want to get this one in. Since we were just talking about Georgia Tech, it reminded me again, why were there no Matt Wieters games, Joe? Like people talk about Matt Wieters in college at this reverential level, like kind of at the level of Veritech, and it was really fun watching Veritech. So it would have been, I think, really cool to see Matt Wieters. And again, that's just kind of a function of like a, you know, Omaha and Georgia Tech just and Matt Wieters all just kind of didn't mesh up quite right. And then, I mean, we'd still be at the, you know, at mercy of everyone putting the game in a place we could see it, but that would have been another fun one to get to see with just Matt Wieters catching the game and then Matt Wieters closing the game.
Yeah. The rare Buster Posey pitching, yes. You know, pitching appearances, you know, he was extremely effective in a very small number of appearances. But yeah. If I had been thinking, maybe I would have for this podcast, we would have done an extra segment where I literally just try to write out all or most of the individual teams I searched for just to try to find stuff and came up empty because we may not have had time to touch on them all. And it's kind of funny. Like, I think that the best part about that would be that there are some very obvious candidates that I typed in there that I just could not find. And then there are also some where you've been like, why on earth were you looking for this, you know, for this particular team? Like, it just doesn't, you know, but my interests are wide and varied. And typically for the really great teams, I was just searching for anything. But there were some examples of a specific team I searched for where I was looking for one specific thing. Like, I actually did search for, and by the way, I think I saw on Twitter that this game has actually been posted as a thing that the Pac-12 network is doing for free. I don't think you have to be a subscriber. I think they were just putting it out there. But I searched for 2016 Utah because, like, it would have been cool to see, you know, that is such a weird blip in history, Utah winning the 2016 Pac-12 title and finishing under 500 overall, or maybe just over 500. More, I think they finished 26-29 or 29-26, one of the two. And that's such a weird moment in time. And I remember that series, they played Washington for the Pac-12 title. And seeing that clinching game, I think, would have been interesting. So I did search for – that's an example of one where I was looking for something. Like, I did not want just a random March game for the 2016 Utah team. So there were sometimes I was looking for something very specific, some where I was looking for just a really anything I could get. But it would have been – maybe I'll try to find a way and go back and look at my entire YouTube history from this, because I think out of the – roughly 300 Division I teams we have in there, I'm fairly confident I typed specific teams, at least 120 specific teams, into the search bar at some point.
Yeah, that would be entertaining. Absolutely. We had fun doing this. Hopefully you guys had fun listening. If you have more ideas for games that we can rewatch, again, we're ending the series here, but I'm not ruling out the idea that we might roll this back out for a month in the fall or sometime next year, you know, who knows. But we're gonna call it quits here, but that doesn't mean Joe is done compiling classic games. He can stock his DVR YouTube queue with for the future. So if you have any of those, we're interested in seeing them, and with the link, you know, we're not, again, it's one thing to say, like, I want to watch a Steven Strasburg start. It's another thing to be able to do it. You know, so we're always on the lookout for things like that if you guys have them. We're probably going to continue podcasting twice a week. We're not quite sure right now what that all is going to look like for the rest of the summer. We will definitely be back here next week on Tuesday with another of our newsy editions of the Baseball America College Podcast. We'll see if we can keep this rhythm of twice a week going. I actually was, when I was scrolling through the YouTube or the iTunes history of the podcast, so I could make sure we got all of the, I had the full list of the podcasts we did during this series. I came across the one that Joe and I did the day after they canceled the College World Series. And I was curious, so I listened to a lot of it. And back then I said, like, I don't think we're going to be podcasting twice a week during the spring. I think we're going to have to cut down to one a week. And well, that didn't last very long. So, you know, we'll see where we go from here. But we'll certainly be podcasting at least once a week the rest of the summer. And I don't want to rule out the idea that we continue it twice a week. But again, our classic series, you can find the archives on your favorite podcasting app, be that iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you're listening to podcasts. You can find the Baseball America podcast. And while you're there, please subscribe, please rate, please review. Doing any of those things really helps us and helps the podcast and helps it to grow and find new listeners as well. So we really appreciate you guys taking the time to do that. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy, BA. And you can check out all of our work at baseballamerica.com. There's plenty there to get you through this extended offseason. Joe, before I sign us off, do you have any parting words for the people upon the conclusion of this series?
Public service announcement. Those lists are limited to games that I could find on YouTube. I cannot make games appear out of thin air, no matter how hard I have tried. And believe me, I have tried. And also, thank you for listening and reading.
And if you have any like old VCR tapes sitting in your office from like 1996 in the College World Series or 2004, feel like throwing them up on YouTube. Like, we're here for that.
Look, I mean, here's the other thing too. Like, I will not divulge what games they are, but I have come across in various ways. You can put a YouTube video up and make it secret, private. And I've got a couple of those, and I'm not going to put them on a list because that would betray the trust of the people who set them as private links. And also, there's a reason they set them as private links, and they don't want them to get taken down, and it's really just for their own personal use or for a small group of people, what have you. So look, if you're just feeling giving and you've got some of these games out there and you have private links out there, feel free to send them our way. We would certainly, they'd be nice source material for us, and talk about them on the show or what have you if they come up. But I promise your trust will not be betrayed with the links getting sent out. But I do have some of those out there, and if you have those out there, then you know where to find us.
Well, there you guys have it. And remember, Joe is at Twitter at JoeHealyBA. So we'll see you guys next week here on the Baseball America College Podcast. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank all of the coaches, former players, everyone that joined us as guests throughout the spring. We had fun taking these trips down memory lane, and hopefully all of you did as well. So thank you guys again. For Joe Healy, I'm Teddy Cahill. We'll see you next week on the Baseball America College Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.